The walls that speak for themselves. 900 years ago, gold flowed through a city in southeastern Africa on its way to the Indian Ocean. Arab and Swahili traders shipped it across the sea. Ivory, iron, copper, and glass beads from as far as China and India flowed back the other way. The city sat at the crossroads of trade routes that stretched across a continent, and it grew wealthy, powerful, and sophisticated, a capital in every sense. At its peak, between 1200 and 1400, it may have been home to as many as 18,000 people, though estimates vary and the true number is hard to know from ruins alone. The city is called Great Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe comes from a Shona phrase, Zimba za Mabwe, which means houses of stone. And when you see it, you understand the name. The Great Enclosure is the most famous structure. It is not a building in the usual sense. It is a great curving wall of granite, 36 feet high, 800 feet around, 16 feet thick at the base, sweeping in an enormous oval across the hilltop. Picture it, a wall taller than a three-story building, made from an estimated 900,000 granite blocks, each one cut from the surrounding hills and carried to the site by hand. Nothing holds the stones together except the way they fit. No mortar, no cement, just granite on granite, 900,000 times over. The walls aren't straight up and down. They lean slightly inward as they rise, which makes them more stable, a structural trick the builders understood 9 centuries ago. Inside the enclosure stands a conical tower, 30 feet tall, also dry stacked stone. Nobody is entirely sure what the tower was for, a symbol of authority, a granary, something else. But it has stood for 900 years, and so has the wall around it. When European explorers and scholars encountered Great Zimbabwe in the late 1800s, they couldn't accept what they were looking at. A city of this scale and sophistication did not match their assumptions about who could have built it. So they made up stories. Maybe the Phoenicians built it, they said. Maybe it was King Solomon's mines. Maybe some unknown civilization had traveled south and left these ruins behind. They credited anyone, anyone at all, except the people who actually lived there. They wrote books promoting these theories. They taught them in schools. They put them in museum exhibits. They were wrong, and the evidence was never ambiguous. Archaeologists proved it piece by piece, but the proof had been sitting in plain sight the whole time. The pottery found throughout the site is Shona. Its style, its clay, its firing technique all match the Shona ceramic tradition, and nothing else. The metalwork is Shona. The building techniques, the way the granite blocks are split, shaped, and stacked, match other Shona sites found across the region. The soapstone birds carved and placed on the walls are carved in a style found nowhere else in the world except the Shona artistic tradition. The terracing, the drainage, the layout of living quarters, all of it is consistent with the culture that lived in that land for centuries. Great Zimbabwe was built by the ancestors of the people who still live in that part of Africa. Which is why, when the country gained its independence in 1980, it took the name Zimbabwe. The city gave the nation its name. Here is what matters about this story. The walls were always there. The evidence was always there. The craftsmanship was obvious to anyone willing to look. 36 feet high and 800 feet around, without a drop of mortar. The people who refused to see the truth didn't refuse because the evidence was unclear. They refused because they had already decided what they believed, and they weren't willing to change that belief, even when it was staring them in the face. The walls are still standing. They don't need anyone to speak for them.